When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to the Executive Edition. I am SosaFlow of the Poke Battle Network, and I am going around the world and talking to elite trainers and content creators in the battling community. The last few weeks, we've had Sylph leaders, battling families, and today we have one of the top leaders of the community, top coaches of one of the elite teams here in our battling community, the manager of Stadium Elite, Miss Enhoff. How you doing tonight, Miss Enhoff?
I'm doing great, Sosa. I really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, I'm really happy to have you on. You and I have been working a lot with analytics and shows and broadcasts, and just to have you on here now so we can hear your story of how you became such this top-tier analyst and battler, like, absolutely so excited to have you and just can't wait to get into it with you.
Yeah, very happy to jump into why I'm here, what all got between, you know, 2020 and today. The past 3 years feel like a wild ride.
They have been a wild ride, girl. They have been. So let's kick it off. When did you start battling?
Yeah, so I guess I just misspoke. It was 2019. I got back into the game right after Slack Off Community Day. So that was June of 2019, after a couple year hiatus, probably about a year and a half. And I stopped playing because there wasn't a ton to do in the game. And then I moved back down to Philly and wanted a reason to exercise more. I remembered that Go was a thing. I had always enjoyed Go. And I said to myself, if I'm going to commit to this, if I'm going to play this regularly, I need to go all in. I need to get very invested in this game. And at the time, there were two things that you could do with that. You could go hardcore into raiding, or there was this thing called Sylph.gg, or the Sylph Arena, that was just finishing up its first season. So, luckily, down in Philly, there's a robust PvP scene, and I wasn't ready yet, you know, just coming back to the game. Mm-hmm. But I was taking in all the information I could. I was prepping the Pokemon, and between local scene and If there's one person I can attribute my PvP journey to the most, it's Alfindial, or Ken, who was one of the only people who streamed Pokemon Go PvP at this point in time, because remember, that's before GBL, right? Before many people started streaming PvP. Between those two factors, I had a regular source of information, I could bounce ideas off of people, and then additionally, joining Go Stadium as just a member of the server and talking ideas about the upcoming Sinister Cup with people was the biggest boon to, like, the start of my PvP career.
Sinister Cup was a start to a lot of people's career. Alfindel, I don't remember. I remember him doing battling, but I don't remember. I don't remember what battling he was doing.
He was at a couple of the megas. Portland's mega.
Yeah, he was there. I was there with him.
Yeah.
That's right. That was May, but that was May 2020. I was thinking about what was before then, because Sylph season one was fire, right? And you had the content creators was very small. It was like Zionic, Hero of Age, King. Mm-hmm. But was by season two, Ken? It got a little more spicier. We saw a lot more spicier battlers coming out.
Yeah, no, Ken was, if I recall correctly, top 100 in Sylph season one. He was very involved in kind of the hardcore side of show six, pick three battling at that point in time.
Yeah, he's always been really good with the battling scene. Appreciate him. I'm glad he got you hooked on that. And you joined Go Stadium, the original remote. Oh, how did that feel to do that when you got the opportunity to battle and talk to battlers from around the world?
It was remarkable. It was truly, truly one of a kind. And while the novelty of it has kind of been lost in this post-remote kind of existence after the pandemic hit and after battles got opened up, the idea at the time was so interesting to someone who didn't have people really dedicated to play with. My first Sinister Cup was an in-person. I tied for first the Buckles, I officially got first, so that was fun. But my entire prep for that was using the PV Poke training simulator, and basically using custom spreadsheets that I figured out to emulate what is now the team builder. But at the time, that didn't exist. Matt had, you know, the site was a lot more bare bones. He's done remarkable things in improving it. Can't shout out PV Poke enough, but at the time, I had, you know, Poliwrath, Steelix, Alolan Marowak. Those were the three that everyone had on their team.
Yeah.
And then I had
Sinister.
And then I had a Dusclops that looked really good. Claydol.
Hold on. Before we continue, this is pre-XL Dusclops.
This is pre-XL. Yeah. So this was like level 40. Like, you had to max it out all the way.
Yeah.
I brought a Claydol. And then I was looking at Pokemon that could beat Poliwrath and Steelix. And the option that popped up on every search was Medicham. And I didn't have a Hundo Medicham. Mm. So the sixth Pokemon I brought on my Sinister Cup team was Ferrothorn. And this was before the Bullet Seed buff.
Yeah.
So the Bullet Seed buff happened in like 2021. I want to say like,
During the pandemic.
Yeah, maybe late 2020. I want to say it was late 2020, but it was before that, it was a terrible move, but it still beat Poliwrath and Steelix. So it was the sixth Pokemon on my team. I didn't wind up bringing Claydol at all in the tournaments I did, but then also I started on my Go Stadium lobby. So my first Go Stadium tournament was that next month in Ferocious. But I did three Sinister Cup tournaments. I went 3-1, 3-1, 3-2.
Wow.
And I was just over the moon. Everyone was like, who's this new player? Who's bringing a funky team and doing so well starting out? Also, because of that, the fact that I brought Ferrothorn, I had one of the most interesting matches. I don't think it was emulated anywhere else in Sinister Cup. I had Ferrothorn against Starmie, because one of the people at one of my locals brought a Starmie, like hidden power ghost, and he thought it would be interesting Sinister Cup meta. It was not that good.
Man, teams were wilding for Sinister Cup. People were picking so many crazy options.
Well, it was still in that time, like I said, before the PV Poke team builder. So there was a lot more spice that people were bringing to these cups. There was obviously rankings were live, but people, you know, if they thought something could, you know, make a splash, it was hard to double check that.
Yeah, I brought Giraffe Rig for Sinister Cup.
Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
And then I went tricky because Everybody hated Power Up Punch because it got nerfed. It got that nerf where like you lost energy or lost damage, and then if you swapped out, you lost the buff. Right? But everybody was bringing Marowak and Steelix, and I was like, well, if I'm rocking Bubble and I can just boost Bubble and turn it to Charm, that's two out of the three. So like teams were wild back then. I appreciate you with PV Poke. When did you start helping out Matt then? Was that you that started helping out Matt then?
I mean, I gave him feedback, especially once I was in Go Stadium, but no, I wasn't. I have regularly, you know, tagged him, given him like a DM here and there of like, this would be something that's really cool to add. But I can't take too much credit for the success of the site or for the features he's implemented. The legwork has all been him.
And, yeah, no, not asking about you taking the legwork credit. No one will. I will never ever take anything away from Matt. Matt deserves everything he gets.
Yeah,
but just asking, like, did you help him out? Because that was a great attribute to be able to suggest. And like, as a battler myself, like knowing that you're one of those people, like that's really cool. Like, cheers, Enhoff. Like, yo, girl, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, no, having a you know good relationship with Matt. One, he's an amazing person. Like, remove. It's hard to do so, but remove the association with the website entirely, and he's just a great guy. But then also just he's so open to feedback. There have been people who have been like asked me specifically, like, oh, you know, Kakuna Matata, Empoleon Dynamite, whatever you want to call him, Matt, would this be something you think could be added to PvPoke? And sometimes it's a no. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, this is a little bit too niche, or actually you can already do this. You just have to do this kind of workaround. But some things have been tremendous, and just seeing the site grow over the past few years has been remarkable as the scene has grown as well.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just done so amazing for us as a utility. So, and you being a part of it, it's great. You joined Go Stadium. You did your first live tournament. You're helping out PV Poke. We're getting to, you're watching Portland on the screen, you know, cheering for everybody. Pandemic hits. Where are you? Where does Enhoff's life take her?
Yeah. So it was a really interesting point in time. I had not really broken out yet as like a big name. In my local scene, I was known, and that's specifically Southeast Pennsylvania, not even the Philly area. I had a little bit of a name because there was a very good player in the area, Joey VOV. Not quite on a Stark or a Valor Ash level, because obviously you have those big names in Philly to contend with, but was a known name, and I had like some respect with him from beating him, I want to say, in the Ferocious Cup. Then pandemic hits. One, that's when I started being an admin for the Girls at PvP Discord. So, okay. Girls at PvP, I want to say I joined in, you know, December or January of 2019-2020. And then they were looking at adding another admin to the team in spring. So one, I joined on as a member of the admin team, have been since, had a little break at one point, but realistically have just been so in love with that community. Cannot compliment enough the women involved in that community. Just really, really keep me, you know, empowered to keep doing this and help me feel like I'm making a difference and I'm helping inspire others, and that's really huge.
That's great.
And then also, as the pandemic hit, we had our local mega tournament. Now, if you remember, so that was Toxic Cup. Every community was having mega online tournaments because Sylph hadn't put in a rule yet. And
oh my god, yeah, that was when the 9-rounders were coming out.
Yup, and there were no limits to friendship on remote battles. So, you suddenly had the novelty that Go Stadium had in these lobbies was removed a little bit. You didn't have to work up to Ultra Friends. You only had to be, you know, that first stage of friendship. So Southeast PA had a remote tournament for the Toxic Cup. And my spicy pick that month, because, you know, I'm trying something different each month. For instance, in Ferocious, I brought Donphan and did pretty well with that in
Charm or Mutts?
It was Counter. Counter Donphan. Right. Because you had a lot of good pressure on Skuntank, on Umbreon, on Alolan Ninetales, because you ran... This was before it had Body Slam, so you ran Play Rough and Iron Head, or Heavy Slam, whichever it is. It also had Earthquake, so you had that threat, but I always thought Earthquake was just a bit too slow. But yeah, and so on. So in Toxic Cup, I brought, because this was shortly after Lickitung got Body Slam. That was February. Ooh. That was Valentine's Day.
That was Valentine's Day, yeah.
2020. So
that raid day.
Yeah, I went so hard on that raid day to get a hundo. I maxed it out, best buddied it, and that was my sixth pick on my Toxic Cup team. So that was a six-rounder. And who do I face in round three of the tournament but House Stark 93?
Little-known
name of the, especially in the Philadelphia area. That was my first time battling Stark. He was at the time 14th in the world, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, he was high up there.
And I won the first battle, lost the second battle, and won the third battle. I jumped up and down, freaking out. That is the first time I ever felt good at this video game. I proceeded to win that tournament 6-0. And to this day, that is probably the biggest moment, well, I guess at this point, the second biggest moment that I've truly felt good at Pokemon Go PvP.
I think Peoria now
eclipses that, but that's perfectly fine by me.
Yeah, I was about to say. And first off, this is a time when House Stark has already solidified himself as an Elite Four. So people around the community know him as Elite Four House Stark. Yeah. Like, it is not like, oh, this newcomer, this is Elite Four House Stark. So the name's there. So you beat an Elite Four member. Mm-hmm. Had to feel really good.
I was freaking out because it was also, so again, this was April. It was March or April of 2020. There wasn't really a lot to do. This is when, you know, everyone was holed up playing Animal Crossing and, you know, trying to figure out what to focus on. This is why these mega tournaments were so big, was because we just had to have something to do during the pandemic. And, you know, you could have a 6-rounder, 7-rounder entirely remote. So for me, it's my first like big tournament, not my first 6-rounder, but a pretty significant tournament for me. Get paired up with him and obviously Stark, one of the nicest guys in the community. Totally biased as a manager, but even before then, he was someone, you know, local to me, who was a really good battler. I looked up to him as, you know, someone to aspire to be similar to, and had no idea that I would cross paths with him so closely in the future, but it was truly, truly inspiring, and that was the biggest push I could have ever received to, you know, feel like I could be a significant member of the community, a significant battler, a top-tier player, all of this.
Awesome. That's a good exclamation point right there for sure.
Yeah.
House Stark's amazing. Great guy. I've run into him twice for the LA Mega and for Portland Mega. And just great laughs all around. So that's a great feeling right there, especially in this time where like a hard pivot is coming. And to be honest, there's a big difference, and I'm sure you're aware of it, of in-person battling and remote battling. Like, there's a different feel, all sorts of stuff. So can I get your thoughts on that, on the difference of what you feel? If there's a big difference, what you feel might be, you don't have to say better, right? Because it's all battling. We all love battling, but your thoughts on the in-person versus, not versus, but compared to
remote.
Yeah, so we can return also to this point in time, because there's another thing that starts in, like, the start of the pandemic, and that's me creating content. Not streaming. Yeah. That wouldn't come for another, you know, year or so, but creating content. But the difference between in-person and remote, it's so hard to quantify. It's so hard to explain to people. And it's one of the biggest things that I hear from my students when I give competitive coaching on Medify is, okay, I'm really worried about being on stream. I've never, you know, been, like, featured in that degree before. And it's something that, you know, myself and other streamers take for granted at times, is it's a huge benefit if you get featured on stream to have experience battling in front of others. It's a huge benefit for your first regional if you've had in-person Sylph tournaments before, even if it was, you know, 2-3 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
That you just know, hey, this is how you interact with someone in this setting. This is how you don't get, you know, all in your head about the noises, about the lights, about, you know, having others around you, because in some ways, and some people prefer it, some people don't, remote battling can be a blessing or a curse. You can't see your opponent's body language. You can't, you know, necessarily get in the zone as much for some people if you're not in an in-person setting. But yeah. On the flip side, you're able to prepare a lot more. You're able to, you know, set the music that you like. You're able to, you know, be as, like, comfortable or engaged as you want with, you know, your phone, with the battle. If you want to count out loud, because some people prefer counting out loud, you can do that, which is very difficult to do in person without giving your opponent a huge advantage. So there's really night and day difference. And I know a lot of people who really prefer that online battle. And I know probably a larger group of, you know, the OG Sylphers, so to speak, even predating me, who really prefer the in-person. Arrow in particular will always prefer that in person when he can see his opponent in front of him, because that's where, you know, he grew to love PvP. That's, you know, how he likes to play PvP. And you know, it's that kind of extra layer of you know, experience that he really enjoys, and many, you know, longtime battlers do enjoy.
Yeah. I'm biased because I'm one of those old-time, long-time battlers that I just, it's, I understand, like, as remote, you get to do some more prep, a little more in-depth prep.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not in the fire. Like, it is not, a lot, there's been so many issues with remote, like, I'm sorry. Like, I've never seen this many issues in a main tournament, in an in-person tournament, with, like, the lag or anything like that. Like, it, I know I'm just talking crazy because I'm sure there has been. I know, no. I know. I'm like San Diego was amazing. Like, there were no issues, but other people had issues. Like, someone I think, like, was just, like, lagging every matchup for an hour straight. It's like, that's awful. But yeah, no, I prefer the in person. I'm one of those, I need to be in that environment. That environment's where I'm going to thrive as a battler, where I'm going to really just be able to focus, get my tournament done, and then never have to think about this meta ever again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's different. It's different.
It is. So you're starting to build up a lot of admins going on to this. How many have we had right now? You become admin on Girls at PvP. You become an admin for
I was a mod in Alfindiel's stream and Discord at the time, and that's been a huge community for me. Even to this day, Alfindiel's community has been, like, my first and returning home nice. Within this greater Pokemon Go community. He's always been you know, really great to talk to, really great to be involved with. His streams are comfortable and all that. But yeah, no, Girls at PvP was really my big foothold in the community. At this point in time, I was not on staff with Go Stadium yet.
Right.
So that was really it. I was starting to create content, so...
Right, the content was coming, was my next one, is that you're the content there going on. And what was your content based around?
Yeah, so for those who have been in the community for a long time, or who know of my work for a long time, I started creating what I can only describe as really rudimentary infographics that I called Core Breakers. Now, Core Breakers was a very simple concept. It posited two Pokemon that I expected to be very prominent in the meta and make up a core. So, for instance, you would see a Swampert Skarmory as a core in a certain cup. In Forest Cup, you saw a lot of Blaziken and Ferrothorn, because this was after the Bullet Seed buff. And Blaziken would beat, I think the only other big fighter was like Breloom. And Ferrothorn, and it would beat Galvantula, if I recall correctly. And Ferrothorn would beat Quagsire, which was a big threat to Blaziken. It would beat Kingdra, which was another big threat to Blaziken. And basically, these two were just a really strong meta pair. Now, the point of the graphics were, okay, these are two Pokemon that you're going to see a lot and will be cored together. What Pokemon beats both of them in the one shield? Very, very straightforward, you know, basic one shields with baits. What we like to call is like the most simple shield scenarios. It's what most of coverage on meta analysis tends to be. And so, for instance, in that Forest Cup, one of the core breakers was Air Slash Vespiquen. And that didn't show up on PvPoke, because on PvPoke, its default moveset was Fury Cutter. It wasn't Air Slash. So that was like the first big, like, oh, this is an interesting, you know, niche tech in a meta, and here's why. Here's what it beats. And I used it in, I believe, all of my Forest Cups that month, despite it being, you know, something like 70th on PvPoke due to it having the wrong fast move for what, you know, I wanted it to do. Mm-hmm. So from there, I actually started getting noticed as, you know, this meta analyst, this creator, because realistically at the time, there wasn't a ton. It was like Go Stadium. No. Would have articles. JRE would have his articles as well. Go Stadium would sometimes have, you know, a graphic. I want to say Game Press was making meta graphics at that point in time as well for the Sylph metas, with, you know, those diagrams as well. And then PvP Steve obviously has always been huge with that. But a couple months later, I want to say, like, probably in August or so, I got contacted first by Sylph, and I actually got ghosted by Sylph. This isn't trying to bring up like bad blood. I have no ill will towards Sylph, but like started talking, and then Go Stadium reached out to me.
Okay.
And Polymer's Up, who is no longer with Go Stadium, but very longtime friend and mentor, reached out about potentially joining that team. And obviously at the time I had been in the lobbies for a while. I was up to Ranger class, so you know how they have their tiered lobbies as well.
Damn, you got the Ranger?
Well, I made it all the way up to God tier. That's where my Twitter handle, Goddess Emhoff, comes from.
Girl, that's where it comes from?
Yeah, I was the only female battler in the God tier of Go Stadium, both when it was formed and until I stopped, you know, playing in that tiered system. That's where awesome. Goddess Emhoff originates.
Oh, well, we'll get to there soon.
But yeah, so that was, I want to say, August or so of 2020. I formally joined Go Stadium staff team as a meta analyst, initially for those Core Breaker graphics, which at this point have been deprecated, or I'm just no longer creating. It's multiple reasons for that, but for whatever reason, I've focused on other things, and we can get to what some of those other things are throughout this interview.
Sweet. So you're helping out Go Stadium now. You're doing, there's too many megas going on. How many? So I got to ask you, because you're a battler. How many groups did you get into, and what was the max amount of tournaments did you sign yourself up for where you're like, too much? That was, I'm out during this time. Because right away, everybody went gung-ho on doing tournaments. Did you do that? Or sorry,
You're absolutely right. So the mainstays, the main things that I continued to compete in are Bucksmont, which was my local group. So that was
okay.
Southeast Pennsylvania. So that's one. Girls at PvP had its own lobby system similar to Go Stadium's. So that was another. Go Stadium itself. So that was three. There still is a LGBT PvP group that I would compete at the time in on a monthly basis. That was four. And then I would join additional tournaments, you know, as seen fit. I want to say my most in a month that I did was probably Voyager Cup. I did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, I did more than that.
You did more than that. I think it's like 7.
Sorceress. Okay, yeah, Sorceress. I did 7 tournaments during the Sorceress Cup. I never was one to hit like double digits. I know people who have done that. What is it? Warrior J-Mac was actually a local of mine in the Philly area.
Really?
He's the guy who hits like 3,000 tournaments. I never was that intense, but I hit 6 or 7 a few of those months before I said, hey, this is way too much, especially scheduling. I need to tone it back a bit.
Yeah. Warrior J-Mac has already finished his 40 in like the first day of Ember Cup. Right. I was looking at your season 2 because that's when the pandemic hit, and I was like, let's see. And you went hard on Toxic Cup, which I was surprised because you were like, I did really good. And then you did your regionals, your another Venture Cup, because that was when they extended Toxic Cup. You're like, yeah, keep going Toxic Cup. You're like, I'll jump in. And you like whooped. But yeah, those were, you definitely, so that was your goes hard season 2 for sure.
Yeah, it was a really fun time.
Yeah. As a battler, seemed like it. It seemed like everybody was just out there having fun because you could just battle whenever. It wasn't as neat as it is today. It was still a little spread out and wide.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of like figuring out who to battle and where, and you know, especially for someone who was still not super, you know, prominent in the community and super, you know. I hadn't been playing Sylph Season 1, for instance, so I didn't know, you know, a ton of the places to find these tournaments if I did want to do additional ones. I was never going to be, you know, a legend or elite in Sylph, where you had to grind these 6 or 7 round tournaments, like do 6 of them each month. The kind of things we see people like Dune or like Rise to occasion. Or, you know, the recent world champion Vroom Vroom Pow be able to do these like intense grinding of tournaments, which now through the wave system, I understand, is no longer required. But at the time, you know, I was finishing like in a respectable range, something like elite, but I wasn't hitting, you know, this like top 50 or whatever range that some were capable of.
No, and that's fine, because, I mean, a lot of us can't even hit ace still. But, yeah, you coming in top 57 in the world come season 3 after being 90. You know, you're climbing still. You get elite both tier season 2 and season 3. You chill out on season 4. When do you start getting out there and start analyzing? Like putting your face out there and analyzing.
Yeah. So, And Sylph obviously tapered off in terms of how much I was getting involved, but my first stream appearance, I want to say, was late 2020, early 2021, somewhere in that range. I was a guest. It was late 2020, and I was a guest on Jiggly Dad's stream back when he was very active as a streamer. And he would host, you know, these interviews. And it was shortly after the Go Beyond update was pushed. Now, that was one of the first things that I was able to work on as a staff member of Go Stadium that was under NDA. So we received the information about the Go Beyond update about a day before it went live. And I wrote up this, like, 10-page piece about why it was a problem, what it would do to PvP. Obviously, all futile in scope, but offering some solutions of, like, hey, you should make this more accessible. And I was like, hey, I know some people here are able to, like, pass things along to Niantic. Can you make this heard? So I was very vocal about how much I disliked it. I was not streaming at the time, so it was entirely in Twitch chats and in Discords. And Jiggly Dad said, hey, I see that you're really passionate about this. Would you like to come talk about it on my stream? So I did. And that was the first time that my face was broadcast on Twitch.tv. Was a very, very passionate interview. I had a lot of intense feelings on the subject. I still do on, you know, what XL does to the PvP scene. But that was my first time. And then I started streaming in March of 2021. I'm actually coming up on my 2-year anniversary of my channel being active on Twitch. And that's when I've started becoming, you know, prominent in terms of having my face and name out there, you know, together. And, you know, it's been a wonderful ride since. I could not ask for a greater, you know, local or centralized community around my stream. And, you know, the Pokemon Go PvP community as a whole, you know, obviously it's easy to focus on some rough people here and there, but as a whole, I could not ask for a better gaming community.
Excellent. Seems like you got yourself a lovely home here. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, as your whatever family cousin I am over here, love you for it, yo. Been happy to watch your and read your analysis early on in your core breakers. Because as a Spice player, I love seeing that. And I'm like, okay, I can work with that. And then also when I see it being played against me, I can be like, I know your game plan, guy. Like, if you think I didn't know, if you think you're going to throw some spice at me, like, I'm ready for it. And it was so early on too. We didn't have all of these amounts of battles and, you know, information that we have today where people have only had a maximum of like 1,000 battles. Nowadays, everybody's hitting their like 10,000 wins in Great League.
No, that's actually a huge point. In early Sylph, basically everything before Go Battle League released, so much of it was the information game. And you don't really see that as much today. People have their reps. People know, you know, how much damage certain moves do. They know, you know, what to expect from certain Pokemon. It's one of the things that allows Spice to still be viable is people not knowing, you know, for instance, and I'm sure we'll get to this, how much damage Tapu Fini's Surf does as opposed to, you know, a different Pokemon. Or not knowing, you know, what should I expect from a Primeape or a Kofagrigus? Because you're cutting dry Pokemon, and I don't mean to flex through saying that, but it is a benefit that Spice gives, because you're cutting dry Pokemon. Everyone has their Noctowl counts memorized now. Everyone knows their Medicham counts. Everyone knows their Galarian Stunfisk counts, and they know roughly how much damage an Earthquake or a Rock Slide does, and so on, because it's Pokemon that everyone has had reps with, and everyone's studying with PvPoke or whatever tool at this point. and the information gap that you kind of had in early Sylph just doesn't exist to the same degree.
Yeah. It's kind of why I thrived as a battler, because I was doing all sorts of information gaps. I was trying to find everything. So it's been really hard to adjust, like learning the counts and stuff like that, because everybody knows them now. And especially when it comes down to like these new small cups, like Little Cup and Hoenn Cup and whatever, like they, if it's a Pokemon that like has been in the battling scene in the last 4 years, I'm pretty sure the battler knows the counts, knows how to make the throw. You're like, it's a whole other game now. That's why I love the in-person so much, in a way, is that you have to know your stuff. You have to be there to know your stuff. We're like, when you're at home, you can just know your stuff and it's just casual. You know, whatever. Yo, you're kicking up, you got your TV, you've got whatever distraction you want. You can look at the simulation that you've just typed up or whatever. Not saying everybody does that, just saying that.
No, it's an option, and there's definitely people that do it.
Even in life, I've seen some people pull it up in a live tournament too, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not okay. Because your opponent isn't doing that. Like, your opponent's not, like, jamming through PB Poke. How do we get onto the information game? The Spice, because you did the early Core Breakers, and we're going through. You're talking about how great your communities were and put your name out there in the stream. That's right, because it was your first time talking about your streaming days and your Go Battle days. And it seemed like you had a little bit of a hiccup, but you powered through a lot of stuff, it sounded like, and with a strong community behind you.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, at first, it's March of 2021, kind of when I start streaming seriously, and basically it's a one-to-one overlap of my community and Alfindiel's community, despite a very different time of day that I'm streaming, and a very different vibe. Similar vibes. We've always both been very relaxed, but there's, you know, differences. I'm a lot more hardcore of a battler. Even if I, you know, seem aloof at times on stream, I'm usually paying a bit more attention. And then the biggest thing is just time of day. So, you know, very consistent and reliable growth when I was playing explicitly GBL. So streaming and creating content and balancing, you know, Go PvP versus, you know, other games. So I'm experiencing that right now with trying to balance VGC as well. Obviously takes a tank in terms of viewership and engagement, but that's, you know, that's fine. That's something that comes with creating content. And then at the time, trying to balance things like doing Sylph content on stream and doing explicitly Go Battle League was a balance as well. Doing things like viewer battles, it doesn't get the numbers. And it's, you know, a cynical thing. It's a weird experience getting very, like, metric focused. And it's something that I luckily don't really worry about anymore because I've hit partner. But, you know, for a time when you're growing as a creator, when you're starting to look at your partner push and that sort of thing, you notice how much Go Battle League has really, like, grown the scene.
Yeah.
How much it's what a lot of people are just here for. And then on the other side of that, you know, how much people just want to see the battles. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine for a viewer to have their preference. And, you know, it certainly makes it good when you are recognized as a strong battler in the scene for that kind of, you know, growth, for that kind of publicity, being seen as, you know, a top battler. And then additionally, as we started out then, an analyst as well. So a few months after starting streaming, this guy named Sosa Flow reached out to me. You might know him.
Was it only a few months? No, I had you on. Didn't you come on for the tournament?
It was Indigo League, I believe, was the first. When was that?
Yeah, the tournament was Indigo League. So we did Indigo League, and it was the... It was like the... I don't remember. It was like the tournament rundown, and I had... I needed somebody, and DeFi was like, yo, hit up my girl Enhoff. And I was like, I saw you on that that chat with Jiggly Dad about being a, you know, the, you know, not liking what the system does, all that stuff. I agree with you. The XL system definitely ruined what we had as PvPers. Like, yeah, I get it now, but you've brought out these Pokemon post this, so you could have adjusted them before the XL system came out. Anyways, I agree with you on that. So I saw you. I was like, oh, perfect. So I reached out to you. I was like, you know, an analyst, wonderful battler. Let's get her on. And you jumped on immediately. And I was like, just when you got on, the analysis that you gave and the breakdowns and everything like that, I was like, yes, she's awesome. You're killing it.
Yeah, so that's actually something that is really interesting, the kind of like breakaway analyst. It's been interesting watching with the Play Pokemon streams for VGC. They have that. They I think for TCG as well, but they'll like cut away to an analyst after the battles. It'd be interesting if they ever, you know, explore that for Go, but that was what it was, what you had, and what you tend to have as well for a lot of your streams is, you know, your live casters and then your breakdown. So at that point in time, it was solely that breakdown kind of role, which was, you know, still to me something I very much enjoy doing, and really appreciate you having asked me to join for that.
Nah, I was so grateful when you said you'd join and all that stuff. And then I realized that you were on Go Stadium, and I was like, wait a minute, what? Yeah, I didn't realize it until after that I had you on that you were Go Stadium, because I did a little more research on who people were. I was like, okay, I guess I have to do more research on people. But yeah, I was like, sweet. It's just been wonderful to have you. It was wonderful to have you on, and you were always there for the Indigo League. How was your experience on the Indigo League and doing the Friday night fights?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been great casting in general, whether it's on the analyst desk, whether it's live casting. I've always enjoyed that aspect, and I tend to, you know, agree to a lot more than I maybe should in terms of like time commitment, but I really do love it. And I think Indigo League was really great. It was also phenomenal because I got to be involved with DeFi as well, who is one of my longest, you know, friendships in the community. Her and I, you know, to this day, seeing each other for the first time in person at NAIC after, you know, multiple years of knowing each other online, and then still now we're doing casting coaching that we do in the Girls at PvP server. It's just been really great. So Indigo League nice. was great with that. Friday Night Fights, similar, like, just has always been really great to be involved with other people who are passionate about the game and covering, you know, battles in a way that really, you know, highlights and brings out the best in them.
Yeah, well, that's what the whole thing was, and was happy to have the top tier analysis that you had. And I was kind of thinking that maybe this was like your first way to get with the Elite Stadium guys, but you were already Go Stadium. After Indigo League, you kind of made a big old sign-in. This big old sign-in happened.
Yeah, so it was really interesting because at that point in time, so Stadium Elite and then being Elite Four has had an interesting dynamic with Go Stadium over the years. There was a time when they weren't really like super supported by Go Stadium. And at that point in time, like, I knew obviously Stark, he was local. I knew of Toshi and Arrow and Valor Ash. I think I had seen Valor Ash at a tournament in Philly at one point. But I didn't know them super well at all, really. I was a member of stadium staff, but it wasn't like we were regularly chatting. Stark was involved on the voting for the cliffhanger format, so I had some interactions with him there. But then he reached out to me in late 2021.
Okay.
And said that they were interested in having someone on as a manager for the team, and would I be interested in, like, filling that role? And for me, it was very surreal because, again, as we've talked about, I was someone who looked up to Stark mm-hmm. over the years. He was my, you know, the big local in a small pond, so to speak. And, you know, still to this day, one of, if not the best, battler in the world, like, in terms of consistency, in terms of, you know, performing at the highest level. I know that that kind of title has been talked about recently, and I wouldn't ascribe it to any battler in particular, but, if that conversation were to be had, he's in that conversation, so to speak.
Yeah, he is absolutely in that conversation.
This was like, I mean, frankly, I was starstruck, which is really weird to say at this point, because just last week, like, I'm just hanging out with Stark and, like, you know, and the team as a whole, and, you know, going to Orlando and having a great time. But at the time, it was like, yeah, sure. And it's been a delight getting to know all of them better, focusing through the rebrand, because Elite Four is a great title, doesn't really hold up that great in, like, the larger Pokemon thing, scene, because it is, you know, an explicit reference to, like, the games, and then obviously, trying to focus more on the relationship with Stadium. All these led to Stadium Elite, which we have today. The jerseys, which I helped design, felt really great to be involved with, and then things like, you know, expanding the team to have two factions within the team, multiple really exciting steps. And it's been a delight to work with all of the members of the team throughout it.
The rebranding is definitely something that needed to happen as a Pokemon battler and stuff like that. Like, at one point, we're all going to be mad at whoever was the title of Elite Four, whether it is the gentlemen that have it now or had it then, like, or anybody else. There are always going to be conflict. So creating, mm-hmm. getting it off as an Elite and then opening up to bigger and better battlers, like, not bigger and better, but, like, more and more battlers yeah. becoming bigger. Such a great idea there.
Well, it was also, if people can remember, this was shortly into, like, the beginning of season two of Factions was when the rebrand happened, and
yeah,
that's when we were regularly getting the Elite 11 comments. So as the team grew, you know, Elite Four is Toshi, Stark, Arrow, and Valorash, but at this point we'd be something like Elite 23 or something in that range, and the jokes, you know, not that they were ever, like, bothersome, like, everyone kind of shrugged them off, but it was pointing out that it didn't really make sense. It made sense when there were four of them, did not make sense when there were, you know, 10 and 12 and so on. So, that as well, you know, made a lot of sense, and I'm really happy with the rebrand personally. I think it combines elements of both, that's just really positive.
Yeah, great. It's a lovely rebrand, and we're so happy to have Stadium Elite in Emerald for Factions. And, I mean, the team still seems to still be intact. So you're doing a great job keeping them up, Coach. What do you tell your team members before a cycle begins?
Before a cycle begins. So, I mean, regularly, and this has been my belief of the team, every time, every cycle, every bout, that we're the best in the world. And, I mean, you ask any factions manager, they're going to say that their faction is the best in the world. But I do you know, have that confidence in every member of our team. If they're, you know, firing on all cylinders, they're on the best team for a reason, and they have earned that spot as just an exceptional battler. I could not ask for a better group of players to manage and to play alongside as well. So the regular thing is, this team is the best in the world. Let's, you know, show that in particular. And you know, it's not like we're going to win every cycle, but we're regularly at the top. I don't think any team in North America has had the consistency at the top, you know, top three, so to speak, that we have. And that's really a point of pride for myself. It's really a point of pride for the team. You know, regardless of where we wind up in a week, in an individual battle, wherever it is, the team just is remarkably persistent, is remarkably like strong. Obviously, people wax and wane in their like love with the game and so on, and we have, you know, the roster to support that. You've seen, you know, other factions. The big easy one to point to is Marylanders, which nothing but love for the people who were on Marylanders. Obviously, Pocket is a very good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Brady is on the team of Stadium Elite, and Shund is as well. Huntress, also a very good friend of mine. But you see teams like Marylanders, which disintegrated or broke or whatever you want to call it, dissolved as a faction.
Dissolved.
Because they just didn't have players to play week to week. They were working with a 7-person roster. And the strength of our team and the depth of the roster as well has always been an additional highlight, which is really nice to have.
Yeah, with additions like Party Marty,
mm-hmm. Rise
to the occasion. I was going to say, who else did you just snag from people? I was like, you guys just were like phone calling out to everybody like, hey, the Elite's looking for players. You in? Awesome. Hey, we just saw you at Play Pokemon. You want in? Awesome.
Yeah, that's been a super interesting journey. Marty, for instance, was a local of mine here in Boston before he moved out to California for for practicing medicine. He's always been a very close friend, and having him join on the team has been, you know, delightful as well. And Rise as well, just a really delightful guy to be able to meet at these in-person tournaments. Yeah. And, it's one thing that I've been really thankful. Not that there's, you know, a ton of people in the community who are great battlers who aren't great people, but that everyone on our team, I get to think of as both great battlers and great people is really important to me personally.
That's wonderful. Seems like you got some good teams going on in your faction cycles. So good luck to you guys out there when you're hitting that emerald.
The silver faction has mm-hmm. been delightful to have, to see. You know, obviously there's been some critiques of, you know, running over Open and now Iron as well, but It's the process.
That's the process.
Yeah, the process that still has for factions. We're not, you know, trying to brag about our success. Like we recognize that this is par for the course for a faction of this caliber in these tiers. But
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's nothing to be like, you know, putting down teams that are, you know, firmly in open tier or iron tier, and that's fine. You know, there's people who just play factions and just want to do that, or you know, are at that level trying their best, but are at that level, and that's perfectly fine and valid.
Yeah, like,
but it's been great to get to know those players as well in the greater Stadium Elite team, and then also seeing that that faction has succeeded so well. I think we just clinched our double promotion from Iron up to what is that? Bronze?
Silver?
I think we go to Copper and then Bronze.
Is there a Copper? I thought there was Iron. I thought it was Iron, Bronze, tier. Silver.
I'm pretty sure there's a Copper tier.
Oh, okay.
But yeah,
I haven't been a part of that lower level, and heading back there real quickly, though. Don't you worry.
But yeah, it's been remarkable, and it's something that I very much hold in high regard in my involvement in the community and my involvement in battling as a whole, and just knowing extremely good battlers both to scrim against, and I could not have done as well as I have in tournaments both before and Peoria itself if not for the help of this team. It's been, you know, they've always been in my corner, and just every single one of them have been pivotal in my growth and also in supporting me.
That's great. There is a Copper tier, you're right. So you'll jump from Iron to Bronze.
Right. Okay.
Well, I'm glad your team's supporting you and all that. Were they? Let's get into it, because here comes the big one, where the support really comes from. Were they supporting you when you went out for NAIC last year and play Pokemon? Were they behind your back the whole way? Yeah. Well, so tell us about your play Pokemon journey, Miss Enhoff.
Yeah. So, well, NAIC was a bloodbath because that was before we had the Silver faction. So it was just the, you know, 11 or so members of Stadium Elite Emerald, or whatever you want to call the original Stadium Elite team.
Right.
And we were all registered for NAIC. It was the first tournament that most of us were doing. Rise was not yet on the team, but Rise had won Milwaukee. Pranav had made a really good run in Milwaukee, but had not made it. Uh-huh. And so we were all, you know, involved. We had quite a bit of bloodbath. So I believe round one, Toshi and Valorash were paired.
Oh, and yeah, I saw that, and I was like, what?
I think that was the first streamed battle of the tournament. I was paired with Pranav round two, and I knocked him out of the tournament. He will never forgive me for that. I want to say Jengles paired with Toshi early on as well. There was just a lot of infighting. And ultimately, at the end of the first day, none of us had made, you know, the top cut. Which, I mean, at the time was pretty like heavy. Looking back, that tournament was stacked.
Yeah.
It was so many people's first tournament. You know, obviously would have preferred to do better personally at it. And I know everyone on the team would have, but realistically, that's probably, if not the hardest tournament that I've been in, top three for regional type tournaments. Baltimore was up there as well. Toronto probably would have been up there as well, but I wasn't really taking Toronto that seriously because I'd already qualified.
Yeah.
The last chance qualifier in London was also like super intense, but NAIC was ridiculous in terms of like how cutthroat it was. And, you know, the team was there for each other, but the team was also knocking each other out a good chunk. So,
they always do that. In San Diego, they had Swablus fighting against each other in the same bracket.
Yep.
I was like, what is going on? There's like 8 Swablus in the bracket in the first round. The captains were fighting against each other. Oh, goodness. But yeah.
So the next step in the Play Pokemon journey was I was going to Worlds. But before that, I was reached out to by the head editor for Pokemon.com. Who had recognized both that I had analyst experience, that I had solid play experience, other content creation, and then most notably writing experience, which I can completely attribute to Go Stadium, because I've done so much writing there on article work.
Right.
So he asked me if I would be willing to write a piece about the World Championships upcoming in London. And, of course, yes, was my response. 110% yes. Would love to do that. And, I mean, the rest is history. I wrote probably the piece I've been most proud of in terms of writing in my, like, analyst career for the lead-up to Worlds. I would consider it even stronger than my recap of Worlds, just because it went into a lot more detail of like why people were bringing certain things, and
I read that
and
one.
So on.
Yeah, no, and, I read that one where you broke down Pokemon. It had a real good old school Game Hub vibe, mm-hmm. where Game Vibe was like, I don't know if you remember those. I'm sure you do. Where you saw the mm-hmm. they like broke down what the rock paper scissor was. Well, like rock was like water types and this type. So like these were the Pokemon you wanted to look at. It had a real good vibe. Like, you broke down why the Registeel and the Walrein were needed. I loved it. I thought that article mm-hmm. was great.
Yeah, so that was delightful and was an honor and really great to be recognized by, you know, the company itself, Pokemon.
Yeah. Did you frame
it? I
just
signed a little NDA that had Pikachu on it. I don't know if that's a breach of NDA to say that.
Oh. Did you print it and like post it on your wall? Be like official.
Not the NDA, but the article itself. I actually haven't posted it yet, but I saved a PDF of the webpage when it was on the front page of Pokemon.com.
Gotta print it.
Yeah, I plan to print it out and frame it.
Yeah.
And then the article itself. Because, yeah, I was freaking out. I was, and not being able to tell anyone. Had a similar experience with DeFi and her casting was, once it was announced, she was like, I was so, like, I wanted to tell you so bad, and I'm like, I understand.
Were you, like, giving her winks through the phone, be like, girl, I get you.
Not know at that point in time, later I was like, hey, I just had the same thing that you had, but it's the best secret to have, because it's so... such an honor, and still is. And then going to Worlds, coming in sixth in the last Champs qualifier was a real bummer, because I thought that they would cascade down invites, and mm-hmm. they did not.
Oh.
So I really thought after that performance that I could be playing in Worlds, and then I wasn't. And that was still fine. Like, I really enjoyed watching it. I really enjoyed the people I was at the World Championships with. Some people I was meeting for the first time in person, and that was wonderful. And then obviously writing for the recap of Worlds was also just really, really surreal. And obviously for those and other reasons, I'm so excited for Worlds this year as well.
I'm so excited for you for Worlds for this year. Like, I'm glad you got to go and spectate, because it was wonderful for London. But the fact that now you get to get into it, you had to go up against your finals against somebody who you just praised about an hour ago. Like, 7 mm-hmm. minutes into this conversation we've had, you were already talking about how amazing Hot Pocket is.
Yeah. So after Worlds, Baltimore was like not even a month later.
Did you do Baltimore?
What?
Did you do Baltimore too?
Yes. So, I mean, obviously my teammates stole the show in Baltimore with Stark and Elam
playing
first and second. But no, I had a really good showing in Baltimore. I went 5-2. I had Dewgong and Shadow Jumpluff for my, like, stand-ins for Walrein and Trevenant.
And this is pre-Fairy Wind, right?
No, this was after Fairy Wind was added. So it was just
So Jump Love could play. Cool.
And that was, at that point in time, probably my best match that I played was against Cindy, or Greenish Backwards, whatever you want to call her. Was my round like 4 or 5 opponent. And it was right at the end of stream, and they were trying to get, you know, the two of us on stream featured, but they ran out of time. It was like 5 p.m. And it was just like amazing, because I've always really looked up to Cindy as well, as a leader, you know, a woman battler in the community, and a leader, and huge, you know, like face of the community in that aspect. And was a really interesting time, because, you know, we both have kind of like our ace Pokemon, so to speak. I have Tapu Fini. She has the Shadow Kanto Ninetales. We did wind up getting that matchup at one point, which was really good for me, because Tapu Fini obviously wins that matchup. But ultimately, I won 2-1, but it was one of the closest matches I've played of a best of three to this day. It was remarkable.
That's great.
But ultimately, I was knocked out in Baltimore. I got to, you know, watch Stark win it all, so no complaints at all. And then was debating Peoria for the longest time. I wasn't, you know, headed up to Toronto for Kiandi, so I knew that it was going to be a more limited tournament, and I knew that this kid named Hot Pocket 777 was going if his mom would let him, if he got good enough grades on a test. And I said, well, you know, of who I know is going, and plenty of good battlers wound up going. Like, I don't mean to diminish those who were there.
Yeah.
But of the people that I knew at the time that were going, Pocket was the biggest competition I could think of.
Thanks, Mom! And,
I know, no, Pocket and his mom, both wonderful, wonderful members of the community, delightful people. Ultimately, I guess he got the grades or whatever it was that let him go to Peoria. I figured out the most backwards way of getting there. I flew into to Chicago and then had to take a bus for 4 hours from Chicago to Peoria.
Good
it was
Lord.
Terrible. But right
Sound
before,
like a 1980s John Candy movie.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was watching tumbleweeds go by. I flew in a day early. I flew in on Thursday and paid for an extra night in the hotel and all that. Because I said, listen, this is your chance. Do it smart. Because it's like a 60-person tournament. And like I said, at the time, you know, I completely forgot that, you know, it was so close to Chicago. And naturally, all the Chicago stars would be there. And some other great players like Trent. I think Onion Frank was there, if I recall correctly.
Onion
I didn't
Frank
play
was
him,
there.
But, like, but people who are very strong and consistent battlers. Like, I don't mean to downplay anyone in explaining this. It was just before going, I was like, oh, Pocket's going to be there. Pocket's who I should prepare for. I was scrimming against a team that he was practicing with that he ultimately didn't wind up bringing. And I settled on my 6, and I said, okay. Let's see how it goes. And obviously it went pretty well. I did not ask for a better tournament, except for, you know, a few misplays in the grand finals, but if I'm gonna make misplays, might as well make them there.
So first off, Miss Enhoff, I think you already know the reason why I wanted you on here, is because I have not got to praise you for your amazing usage of Primeape. I know everybody's praising you for the Tapu Fini, but let me tell you something. A lot of players didn't play Pokemon because they saw that Primeape. They're like, oh, I'm going to play this. And you're like, sucker.
Yep. The best bench presser that I could ask for.
Absolutely. Like, and as a Primeape user too, like now with Noctowl, I'm surprised we didn't get to see what a close combat got to do. I'm surprised that didn't come out. Hot Pocket didn't throw that out on you. Because that close combat on a Noctowl takes out 91 of its health, and you're just sitting there
but just smiles as the bird is done. You just put up one shield and you've now got a Primeape loaded with health, a Night Slash for the Trevenant maybe that'll come out. But yeah, it was beautifully done.
Yeah, this was before the wing attack buff.
Mm-hmm.
And my Primeape was actually running Night Slash Ice Punch. And that was for two reasons. One is Noctowl.
Right.
My Primeape could win the one shield against Noctowl, straight Ice Punch. The one shield against Altaria, straight Ice Punch. And that was specific IVs that I needed. And then the two shield against Trevenant, straight Night Slash. So those were the three things I wanted to get. I then used Primeape primarily as bench pressure. And I did... I qualified for Japan with only 5 Pokemon because I didn't bring Primeape until the Grand Finals.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No, I mean, I was happy to do that. And then, you know, obviously the 100% win rate Primeape joke and all that is also present now.
Oh, no. No, no. Like, I don't think you understand the oh, no, I'm about to say. Because he just made it so the rest of us can no longer call ourselves Primeape users because you went to a tournament and walked away with 100% win rate.
It's That's true.
Like, there's nobody else. Like, Kolxiak cannot, is a Victini user. No one else can say they're a Victini user. Zyberglur is a Shadow Mawile user. Like, no one, with that hard staple out there, like, you have solidified yourself. As a Primeape, as the Primeape user.
It's true, and especially now that the Wing Attack buff happened, I don't know that anyone else is going to qualify with Primeape. I would love to see it, obviously. No. I would love to see someone qualify with Primeape, but I don't know that that's coming at this point. And I'm happy to have that. I'm happy to, you know, also have, I think, Kofagrigus. I might be the only person that winds up qualifying with Kofagrigus as well, which it's
so
a really
good.
Fun Pokemon. I'm surprised it's not seen more. But
do you
I
not
it.
Remember my Team Rocket video? I made it like season 9 or whatever. I was like Kofa and Noctowl. This is like before Play Pokemon even came out. Like that core right there, just throwing Shadow Balls.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good.
Yeah, and it's such a solid, like, neutral Pokemon. If it doesn't get locked on a Noctowl, for instance.
I was really looking into Guzzlord. Oh, no, was it Guzzlord? That you played? Yeah, you played Guzzlord.
In Toronto.
In Toronto, and I got really mad at you. I think I hit you up. I was like, great, now you're showing everybody how Guzzlord works? Damn it. Because Guzzlord was looking really good until that wing attack buff.
Yep. No, it had really interesting play. It's one of the hardest walls to Trevenant that's out there.
Right, and with the Altaria, it looked like Altaria was going to be the main flyer at that point because it's just so thick.
Yep, and having that Dragon Claw was just really nice, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh no, and Huff brought it! Don't! No! And then everyone was like, don't worry, there's going to be an update. And I was like, oh, all right, I'll bench all my Pokemon then.
Yeah, so that was really interesting. I was already registered for Toronto when Peoria happened. I think I probably registered for Toronto before I registered for Peoria because it was so last second.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so thankful that I did. And yeah, I can't echo enough, like, I could not have asked for, you know, a better grand finalist. I guess I could ask for, you know, a teammate or someone like that, but Hot Pocket won, you know, again, one of those people at that caliber that you could call, you know, one of the best in the world. Two, just like really, really friendly battles. Like, it wasn't like we were chatting the whole time, but we were making jokes back and forth. We were, you know, making light of the situations when, you know, you hit a bunch of Moonblast debuffs in a row. Like,
you could tell.
Yeah, it wasn't like he was never angry with me, and I've definitely had the experience in Go battles in person, and especially now as well with VGC, like, mm-hmm. sometimes you have opponents who are one, sore losers, and two, like, you know, grumpy winners as well, of like, you know, being very like over the top and rubbing it in your face. And Pocket was neither. Pocket, you know, very, very great kid. And I'm very lucky to be a friend of his, and a co-qualifier for Japan, with him as well.
Yeah, that's, and with your teammates as well, Ilkom and yeah. House Stark.
Yeah, so Ilkom, House Stark, and then directly, well, Salt Lake happened, but then next after that I went to was Toronto, and I got to watch Mason qualify there as well. It was really great.
Ah, that tournament was so good, and Mason and Brown Baller did so well when they didn't play against each other. But yep. Watching that finals was so hard. It was like, oh, this Umbreon Magic matchup is just the worst.
Yeah.
But the tournament was so good. They played that so well. And then you didn't go to Arlington. You were like, I'm going to skip this. No, I did go to Arlington. You judged Arlington.
Yeah. No, I pretty famously was.
That's right. There was that situation.
Yeah. So I was, you know, still wanted to go to a bunch of regionals. Knew that you could apply to judge for regionals, and knew that people had, you know, been able to qualify for Worlds and then judge, because King had done it in that first truncated season, and also knew that, you know, you could make things work if there were, like plans that you already had to go to a regional, like they could take you on a staff if you, you know, had people to back you up, and I had references, which was really nice. And I wanted to give back. Like, I do think that these regionals and what the Pokemon Company is doing for the scene is remarkable, and I want to support that however I can. So it was actually, like, a bunch of the things that came up with Arlington and afterwards were things that I had brought up, you know, previously. Things like King competing after having qualified, things like, and this isn't to, like, throw King under the bus. I think King's great. Just like he's the example, and now obviously Stark as well has now judged for Orlando, and like it's what's needed. We need more judges that know the game.
Oh, girl, I was there when I saw in San Diego, mm-hmm. And having, you know, it was CCO King,
yep, CCO
Scrap
King.
And Pete. Like
no, right?
And there was a big old hiccup. This was day two. But yeah, Mel was there for day one. Yes. Okay. Mel was there for day one. I don't think I saw her day two.
Mm-hmm.
There was a controversy whatsoever, but to have the battlers
know
there,
the game. Yeah.
To have the battlers as the judges who have seen it over and over. We had just talked about, they've conditioned themselves 10,000 wins under their mm-hmm. belts. They've seen the play constantly over and over. They know it, like they sleep with it.
Mm-hmm.
So great for the community. And I think the community doesn't really understand that as a, yet. And I appreciated you jumping in and being the judge and participating in that.
So even beyond the like 10,000 battles, so on, I had been being a tournament organizer and manager for years at this point,
yeah.
as an admin of Girls at PvP. So had a lot of experience, had written up rule documents on, you know, replays and so on that we would suggest to different grassroots circuits and so on. So was very happy and you know, felt more than qualified and still do feel more than qualified. It was an experience having not done an in-person event before. A lot of people who recognized me was very fun, was very complimentary, was very nice. Some people who either didn't recognize me or didn't care that I knew my stuff. Because obviously you see the ugly side of quite a few battlers. If you have to give a ruling that doesn't go their way. And there were no shortages of disputes on day one. There mm-hmm. were no shortage of phone issues day one. So, like, this is not in any way to put down any battlers that were there. It is entirely your right to dispute a match. And we were definitely having phone issues. We had to replace a bunch of phones because they wouldn't, you know, send battles correctly or whatever it may be. But there was certainly a good deal of either people not knowing or not caring that I know my shit. And I mean, to put it bluntly, a good deal of misogyny around my calls, which was not surprising, but still is frustrating, you know, to deal with in a professional style environment like that.
Sometimes I forget, though, that people aren't as invested into the battler scene as we are. Like, mm-hmm. to not know who you are when you make the call, like, even if you're a woman or whatever, like, mm-hmm. to not know who you are and have to know, like, that it means they've never been around the scene. They have no idea what the scene is. Like, it just baffles me that was the case. That's been a case.
Well, you have people who are going to these who are just locals. You have people, and I can speak from experience getting paired against people who are just, you know, seeing what it is and having fun. And I do appreciate your words, but also, like, there are tiers of fame in the Go PvP community. And if someone's just, you know, a player who watches, you know, a bigger name like a Zionic or a Caleb or whatever it may be, they probably have no idea who I am. And that's fine. Like, I'm not here to be like, oh, I get no respect or anything like that, because I definitely do. And you and others have been.
I'm not saying that you are saying that. I'm just saying, like, I'm surprised. No, like, that should not be the case. Like, people,
especially after Peoria, it was a bit surprising. Because there were definitely people whose reactions to a ruling was basically like, you don't know what you're doing. And I'm like, I'm qualified for the world championships. Like, not that, you know, that entirely makes every call perfect, but I think I know what I'm doing, and you're always welcome to appeal it to the head judge. And then don't want to get overly into
of course not.
Because it's gotten a little bit personal. There's people who have you know, come at me personally about the events of day two, a call that I was not the one who made, but nonetheless want to, you know, either drag my name or again, I think some of it comes back to misogyny, because people will have issues with a competitor judging, and they didn't have issues with King doing it, and they didn't have issues with Stark doing it, mm-hmm. for instance. And it's like, well, they're both men, and they both are more popular, so to speak, in the community, or bigger names. So it's like, were these people just picking a fight with me? Again, I try to just have Arlington behind me, and enough of the community has, you know, seen and heard and responded, and luckily more and more information has come out about Arlington from people who have done the research, and I appreciate them, that it is, you know, something that I don't have to overly jump into, but mm-hmm. It was a time, and it certainly was a you know, a few days, a week or so, and it was, you know, it's why I'm not judging anymore this season, unless they desperately need me. If a regional happens and the organizer reaches out to me, I'll consider it. But it was, for all intents and purposes, a one and done, which is unfortunate. I would like to do more. I just am not ready for that.
I understand. It's a lot of pressure, and you'd rather focus on your world championship run. Like, you're trying to do something nice. It ended up not being, you know, ended up being the limit, right? You've done seven mm-hmm. tournaments. You know what? Maybe you take a break. Maybe you focus on some other things, and you mm-hmm. flip the script and take a breather from Go and jump into that VGC life.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
No, that's good. Like, that's, sometimes you need that, and that's great. Mm-hmm. I'm sad to lose you. Happy you didn't come to San Diego. Thank God. Would have hated you down in the death matchup down there. Mm-hmm. Would have loved to have seen what you had done in Orlando, though. I think you would have had some fun, because things are getting spicier and spicier now, and I want to get a little more into the spicy metas with you and a little more into that in a little bit. But let us know how your VGC run was in Orlando when you went down.
Yeah, so for those unfamiliar with VGC, it is a 10-round Swiss format.
Ugh.
That has now been updated to be over the course of 2 days. But
Thank God.
For Orlando, it was 10 rounds in a row. I got into the venue at, 9 a.m. Or it started at 9 a.m. I got into the venue like 8:30.
Okay.
Left the venue at 10:30 p.m. And for those curious, Orlando had somewhere in the range of 800 participants for VGC.
Holy hell!
To earn points towards qualifying, you need to go at least 7-3. To make it to day two, you need to go at least 8-2. So I, saw all the Go people like ending up their day. At that point in time, I was something like 4-2. We were like 6 rounds into it. And I was like, do I just drop? And I talked to one of the VGC casters, Joe Brown, who I've gotten to know through trying to help him out with, helping him out with Go.
Nice.
And I said, can I drop? And he's like, no, you still could earn points and you could still make day two. And I said, okay, when I lose 4 battles, I'm allowed to drop, right? And he was like, yeah, when you lose 4, you're allowed to drop. And then I wound up going 7-3. So.
Dang.
So I didn't get to drop at all. It was really fun. My first round opponent was not prepared at all. He did not have a full team prepped. So that was interesting. He later got dropped from the tournament by a judge, but I still played out 3 battles with him. I had no idea who anyone was. So when we talk about Go and you see, like, it's your round 2 opponent and you look up and you look at your feet and you see that your round 2 opponent is Wadaj. And you're like, oh no, I have to play Wadaj in round 2 of this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already going to the loser's bracket. And you have that panic. I had none of that because I had no idea who my opponent was. I was doing my matches. And then obviously there's some people in the community who do both VGC and Go. So Bopper is a very good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
He's also involved in Go Stadium and also just someone who I've gotten to know in a really great way. And so, like, I was messaging him after each round, and I was like, this is how I'm doing. And he was, like, looking at the bracket, and he's like, that person you just beat is, like, a regular, like, top-cut qualifier at regionals. Like you just beat someone who's, like, really good at the game. And I'm like, oh, awesome! Like,
sick!
I got, like, a crit or something, and I happened to win, and, like, this was regularly happening. Once the broadcast ended as well, so again, like I mentioned, I've coached a few of the VGC players. Necra is involved in that group as well, and she was, like, commenting on how I was doing, and I'm like, this is surreal. Like, one, I'm effectively a nobody in the VGC scene. Like, I'm talking to people as each round happens, and I'm like, yeah, like, I'm regularly a Go player. I'm already qualified for Worlds, so I'm just trying this out. And that was not the way to talk to a few of them. A couple people got really upset. A couple people got really upset if I mentioned that I was a Go player and then I beat them.
Oh, boo freaking who, pal. I guess Pokemon isn't that difficult. We all know the chess matchup.
I mean, it was, I'm not going to pretend that I didn't prepare for it and all that, but I did just start playing with Scarlet and Violet, so I'm only a few months into this, and no, but it was really surreal, and again, I don't mean to color it as, like, all my VGC opponents were salty. Most of my opponents were really great. It was only a select few who like, wouldn't sign the slip or stormed off or whatever, and that's, like, that's fine. You find those in every gaming community. That's not... I don't want to make this like a Go versus VGC.
No.
But no, it was also just really interesting to be, like, again, a relative nobody in the scene. But I have Joe Brown, giving me advice. I have Necra being like, whoa, you're like, at 1 point, 6-3 or I'm doing well. And I'm attributing it to, beginner's luck. And it was just really, really cool. Entirely, you know, custom team. Like, I wasn't, you know, stealing from anyone, or not stealing, but, like, it wasn't like I rented someone's team and then, like, built it. It was entirely
copy-pasting.
Like, yeah, it was entirely like, oh, this is a team that makes sense. It's got some synergies on it. Torkoal works really well with these certain Pokemon. And then to see it succeed was great. And yeah, so now I'm at 40 points out of a 300 that you need to qualify for Worlds in VGC. So if I go to a bunch more tournaments and do similarly, I'm actually in a decent position for that competition as well.
Wow. So are you then?
I mean, if I...
Are you, first off, are you even going to be able to, right? Like, first off, it'd be great if you got to Worlds Japan with VGC as well.
So, the double qualify is something that's existed in Pokemon already.
Okay.
I believe Fredgen Park is the one that people usually talk about, having qualified with, I believe it's both VGC and TCG, but I don't know the story super well.
But no one's done it with Go yet.
No, I don't think anyone has, but I might be wrong on that. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, someone from, like, Korea or Japan, or, like, you know, an area that we're less familiar with in, like, coverage of events, qualified with both Go and another. But
that'd be cool.
No, you cannot do both. It is entirely for clout. But I have nothing else to do at these tournaments unless I just spectate. And I think it's really cool to learn a new game. I've really enjoyed learning VGC.
Yeah.
And then it's nice, you know, again, vast majority of VGC people have been super nice. It is nice to, like, give a little bit of an ego jab to the people who do have, like, a superiority complex over it.
Good. Good. That's all I care about. Like, people who think they're superior, I'm not saying, like, Go is superior than VGC or VGC be superior.
But I,
like,
don't really think we have it the other way around.
We're playing Pokemon, for goodness sakes. It's, like, the best game ever. Why are we arguing with each other? There's more ways to play this game? Absolutely. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And that's been, you know, just really delightful to see, you know, to succeed.
Yeah.
At least, you know, so far, knock on wood. We'll see how Knoxville and beyond goes, but
so there are more competitions your way. So you are going to Knoxville. Are you going to
I'm eyeing up Vancouver.
Okay.
But I'm confirmed for Knoxville, Charlotte, Milwaukee. Obviously Hartford is right in my backyard.
Right.
And then NAIC at this current point in time, I'd like to go to NAIC strictly as a spectator, as a manager for the team. Because we'd like to have, you know, as much of Stadium Elite there as possible.
Right.
Just because it's nice to see, you know, everyone at one event. But if I am close to qualifying for VGC at that point, I might compete in VGC at NAIC just to get the double qualify.
Girl.
But we'll have to see.
Girl, do you sleep? How do you hunt these things? How do you have time to hunt every Pokemon? All these community days and all that stuff.
It's a lot. It is certainly a time, certainly a grind. I joke a lot with quite a few of my friends that I basically have two things that I do in life. I have my job, and then everything else is Pokemon.
Wow.
Which is good and bad. I definitely over-index into it at times, but I find it really rewarding, and I really love, you know, the people I've met through this, people, you know, throughout both the Go and VGC communities, obviously limited in that community, but people like, you know, Necra, people like Gabby, mm-hmm. who I'm very blessed to have as a local, and Chalky as well, Gabby's partner. Really, really great people, and I'm really blessed to get to know them.
Wonderful. That sounds like a great journey you've had so far, Miss Enhoff.
It has been, and you know, it's only up from here. I'm so excited for Yokohama. I'm so excited for, you know, what the future holds in terms of, you know, this game for Go, this, you know, competitive scene for Go and VGC, and I'm sure I'll try my hand at TCG eventually as well. And it just seems like, you know, we hear things like Orlando was the largest regional tournament ever, larger than the NAICs last year, larger than Worlds last year as well, if I understand it properly. And it's like this competitive circuit is just continuing to grow and gain traction. And, you know, it'll never, well, we'll see. But, you know, I say it'll never be something like, you know, League of Legends or Counter-Strike, where it's like this massive esport phenomena, because Pokemon's generally a more casual game. But seeing it grow and seeing, you know, it remain intact, at least so far, with this community aspect in Go has just been, you know, so delightful.
Who knows? Maybe we can get Indigo League happening for everybody and have an esports situation like that again. Pop that up for everybody. But it
it's. I think grassroots is, you know, Sylph is existing and still, you know, a strong thing to focus on, especially with factions as well. But the grassroots circuit, when we look at things like VGC, with, you know, tournaments throughout being held regularly through things like Victory Road, through things like Hatterene Series, I think where we're at in Go, the sky's really the limit. I think that, you know, so long as Niantic, you know, behaves in terms of keeping the game working, there's so much passion in this community, and there's just so much potential from the game and from the competitive side of it.
There is. And please behave, Niantic. Please, we don't. We've literally invested so much. You guys have asked us to do so much, and we do. Please behave. Miss Enhoff, what is your favorite meta?
What is my favorite meta? It's hard to not say Sinister Cup. Because that was, you know, my first introduction to PvP. I think a lot of people would like to return to that Sinister Cup. That point in time, obviously, there's been nerfs and buffs to multiple Pokemon in the meta since then.
Yeah.
But, like, Sinister Cup just felt really good. Also, obviously, Toxic Cup, my first big tournament. Tournament win. It's hard to beat. In terms of GBL, like, I'm very partial to Love Cup, which we have right now. Just because there's a lot of these bulky generalists like Lickitung, Medicham. I know so many people are sick of Lickitung and Medicham, but like these Pokemon that you can kind of, you know, choose to take energy or shield advantage. But no, I would probably say Sinister Cup. It's hard to beat your first, like the love of PvP, like getting that first glimpse of succeeding, getting that first glimpse of like, this is what a limited meta looks like. And I know, again, it's hindsight is 2020, or this like rose tinted glasses, looking back on nostalgia, but I really love the meta, and I think that there's been multiple amazing metas since then, including Open Great League's variations over time, but it's hard to beat like that first feeling.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a good one. And my Sinister Cup was a good one, too. Like, not for nothing. Like, Alolan Marowak was everywhere. It was definitely a fun one. Everybody was super hyped about it. That's a lovely one. Are you a Show 6 Pick 3 or a Blind 3 player?
I play both, but my best performance will always be in Show 6 Pick 3. I've done really well in GBL over the years of it at this point. Back in like season 2, I hit top 10 on the leaderboard. That was back in the Azumarill, Registeel, Altaria days. And I was running Skarmory. I was running Lantern, Skarmory, and Sunny Cherim.
Pre-surf Lantern, everybody.
Yes. Way back when. Because it beat Registeel and Azumarill. And then Sunny Cherim also beat Registeel and Azumarill. And then Skarmory beat like Azumarill and Altaria. Like, it was a time. And then obviously I've had success in GBL. I've hit the boards multiple times since then. It's definitely not a priority for me at this point. Both because like I've already proven myself in that kind of aspect. And then also just because like the queue time aspect. if I'm going to be streaming, I don't really like going waiting super high in yeah my MMR. But show six, pick three, I mean, obviously, got me an invite to Japan, got me, you know, some prize money as well, and is just what I enjoy playing, first and foremost.
Nice. As now you are a leader in two very strong communities there, and when battlers go and look up to you, what do you want them to think when they come and watch you? What do you want them to think about? Or what do you want them to think? Yeah.
I mean, first and foremost, I want women and to further trans women as well, and other, you know, trans people and queer folk, to be able to look up to me as representation. And that's always been, you know, a source of pressure for sure, being one of, you know, a limited group of women who are taking up residency at these top levels of competition, whether it's doing well in GBL, whether it's doing well at regionals, community formats like ADL, Aero Draft League, these kinds of top level competitions, it isn't something that women in the community have a large footprint in, and it's because the game is so predominantly played by men. And being able to be that representation in these competitions is first and foremost what has been my driving like force to do better. It's something that caused me a great deal of stress when I have to, you know, perform on stage, for instance, at regionals, but additionally has been a huge source of pride knowing that I'm able to do this and give back to the community. For me personally, like, I like people knowing that I'm someone that they can root for, that tries to embody, you know, good values, tries to embody a positive community presence, that wants to give back every time that I succeed, that I, you know, take that and try to teach people, that I take that and, you know, present myself representing, you know, a positive force in the community, that I can be as much as possible, you know, a hero instead of a villain, so to speak. I don't ever want to be a heel to the community. I know there are battlers who thrive on that. You have the Quinbys of the world.
What a name give a big drop. Throwback. Oh my God. Yeah.
You have a big throwback. You have your Quinbys of the world who thrive in that, like being a heel. But,
wow.
But, no, I just want to, and to bring it back as well with representation, like, I want to grow this scene as much as I can. I know, you know, it's cliche at this point from Go Stadium to say build the community, but it is the motto, it is the slogan, build the community. I want to see this community grow, and I want to see this game and this scene flourish. And if I can be someone that's looked up to as a healthy contributor to that, that's, at the end of the day, you know, all I could hope for.
Nice. It's been wonderful. I don't understand where anybody has had any hostility. You've been nothing but a great, great leader to the community, like as the analyst and everything like that from Go Stadium and the manager of Elite, you know, Stadium Elite, like how you've done nothing but keep that up. So I really appreciate you for all that you do and what you do for the community for now, for Go and for VGC out there. So I wish you the best of luck in Japan, my friend. It's going to be really tough. You definitely have a lineup to fight against. Who? Now, I'm not saying anybody's the worst or anything like that.
Yeah.
Who are you? Who is the person you don't want to get paired with first?
So my easiest response to that is Pocket, but I can't say Pocket because it would be really funny if we did get paired in the first round. So I think it would be Stark. Okay. There's multiple reasons for that. One, one of the toughest competitors that I could face in the World Championships to begin with. Two, you know, a teammate Three, that whole like longevity of local rival slash like person I look up to. Like there's multiple layers there, and I would really hate, you know, you look at the bracket and Pocket's obviously up there as well, but like Pocket, I look at the bracket and I'm just like, you know, like post it to some Discords or on Twitter and it's like, oh, what a funny coincidence. But with Stark, I would just be like, you know, rolling over, like, just please, anyone else.
Heard it, folks. Y'all heard it here. And Hoff is going to put a whooping down on Bosok's guy. She's going to beat him so bad. There's going to be another 100-year curse.
Please help me pair against Bosok's guy. That would be fun as well, because I mean, obviously I wouldn't want to knock him out, and I wouldn't want him to knock me out either. But
as the first round, you know, right?
Good friends and all. No, I mean I wouldn't want to pair against him. I wouldn't want to pair against Elam. Bird power, you know, from a perspective of, you know, two women pairing in the first round, I wouldn't want to pair either. Mm-hmm. Also a good friend. So I mean, my options are pretty limited in who I would want to face. I would want probably at this point, like someone who I don't really know super well from like the EU circuit or the LATAM circuit. Not that they're not great people, but like if I don't know you super well, then maybe like there's less of a worry of either knocking you out, or on the alternative, like if I get knocked down, like maybe I'm playing some other people that I don't know as well. Because there's obviously any teammate, any good friend, any of that. It all sucks, and we'll see. It'll be really fun regardless. I have done, you know, there's not a ton of difference between Worlds qualifier and Worlds competitor, in so much as like, you know, day two would be really hype. You got to get through day one first, and we'll see how I do.
Yeah. I mean, I would not want to be paired against any single one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if I felt good about myself, I'd be like, oh, please don't pair me against Tomahawk UK or Gabriel Yohav. Yeah. Like,
that's the thing about Worlds.
That's the thing about Worlds.
Everyone's so good.
Yeah. Well, can't wait to see what the stage holds for you there and in your future as well as a community leader and as an analyst here throughout the entire Pokemon Go community. I really appreciate you coming by through the Executive Edition this week and hanging out with me and giving us your journey run, Miss Enhoff.
Of course. It was a blast.
It really was. And we all learned a lot about your journey here and I mean, not really, I would say challenge, but you really just were like, yeah, I jumped on to admin and then just started whooping everybody in Go. And then I'm on God tier. And then I jumped into Go, you know, it was tough in, you know, NAIC. I did a couple more tournaments, but then I got, you know, my world punched in. And then I joined VGC and I did some battles and then I got my punch in and I started a stream. And 1 month later, I'm on Indigo League. Like you've done so well, just been so good with the community. It's just been a wonderful journey here to hear like how it played out. Thank you for sharing with us here at the Executive Edition.
Of course. I am very blessed with my successes. And they have been numerous, and I'm so thankful for that. And everyone who's been involved with them, because, you know, every single one of these steps is taken multiple people. None of it has been just myself, and I'm really appreciative for that.
Awesome. Well, you have a great support system. You're a wonderful battler. Oh, I'm so, how could I not ask this question? Before we leave, if you could have a Pokemon buddy walk around with you, who is it?
It's Sandshrew
obviously. All the time. All right. Yes. Okay, then my next question is, if you could have any Pokemon be active in battling, right? So, like, you can just literally, out of all 850, battle with one Pokemon, who would you battle with?
I think for that one, it has to be Feeny, Tapu Feeny.
Feeny? Okay, so you got your dream come true. You got to do your dream come true, get a good job on a championship, and punch your ticket to World with your favorite battling Pokemon.
Yeah, 100%. Not only that, but like every single battle for myself against Pocket, I think that was 20 battles, or no, 15 battles. There's the winner's finals and then the two grand finals. I brought Tapu Fini every single battle, and I mean, could not have asked for a better Pokemon to battle with. I love Tapu Fini as a Pokemon in PvP. I think that just remarkable play style, remarkable typing, obviously, and to have myself, despite others succeeding with Tapu Fini, but having myself as claimed by people to be like the best Tapu Fini player or the Tapu Fini master, like, one, I'm not going to get a big head about that, but two, it's such an honor.
You can absolutely get a big head about that. You've punched your ticket into Worlds with that. Tell me which other one of these world champions punched their ticket, right? Like,
there's been a few people who have qualified with it. Were some people who brought it to Worlds. I want to say at Bilbao, the first regional.
Someone Basics? Basics or Vani?
I want to say Basics did. But it's been a while. I'm not keeping super up to date on all that.
It's been a minute. But what's the Poke news? It'll tell you if they had them.
Others have. I don't think anyone else has used it as like extensively in their qualification as I have, especially with the, you know, the Moon Blast debuff stuff. But wonderful. No, I'm so happy that, you know, Tapu Fini was on my team.
If I ever find out you're at a play Pokemon with me and you're not VGCing and you're playing in Go, I'm bringing Vileplume. My Shadow Vileplume will play as bench pressure, but if we ever get paired with it, I'm bringing it out. Speaking of Love Cup, try Shadow Vileplume for 5 seconds. Well, Miss Enhoff, again, thank you for joining me today on Executive Edition. I really appreciate you for all that you do for the community. Please keep your positive community leadership in the Pokemon Go community. We don't want to share you with the VGC. We'll have to if we got to, but we don't want to, okay? But as a battler as well, from the core metas that you came out with earlier in those seasons, thank you. Love them. They're super helpful. So thank you for all that you do. I appreciate you down this journey. That will do it for us here for Executive Edition. I am SosaFlo, and like always, enjoy your battles.